Hello, it is March 2nd, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 462 of the Will Experience Podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We are not quite to the baseball exclusive podcast just yet, but we will be very soon. But we're actually going to have a couple of baseball podcasts anyway. We're going to be doing a college basketball preview podcast, and we'll do some NBA stuff and pop in. But I know I talked last time about finding a co-host, regular co-host, to do the show with me regularly throughout the baseball season. That is a process that is still ongoing. If you have any more suggestions, I've received a lot of them, and thank you very much. Please email me at leach@sportsonearth.com or holler at me on Twitter at William F. Leach. If you email me, I will respond to you because I respond to every email because I'm obsessive compulsive that way. I'm an email box zero. I actually take a lot of pride in that. Every once in a while, like Slate will do like a story where they'll talk about, well, this is how I finally realized to accept that my mailbox was going to have 15,000 messages, or I took a whole weekend and I cleared through half of my messages. I've operated out of inbox zero for about 17 years. You can do it. It can be you. I'm not that organized. I'm not that special. Just, you know, take care of your shit. Anyway, excuse me. Apologize for lecturing you about the state of your mailbox. We are going to have a baseball podcast today. Our guest today is my colleague at MLB.com, Allison Footer. She is the national correspondent for MLB.com. She's been working for MLB.com for quite some time, and she's a very she's got, you name it, at MLB.com, she has done it. She's worked as a beat reporter, as one of the social media people, as a columnist, as a correspondent. She knows it. She is on top of the stuff, and I'm excited to chat with her today. So hey, let's there's literally baseball games, spring training games happening right now. It's amazing. So I mean, they're wearing uniforms. They're like playing baseball. It's amazing. So let's talk to Allison about it. All right, Ms. Footer, thank you for coming on with me. Where are you now? What spring training locale are you at this moment?
Right this very second, I am in Port St. Lucie. I am about 3/4 of a mile away from the Mets spring training facility. It's really nice because I'm like, there's a hotel like right there, so it's great.
Do you, you know, it's funny, I'd never been to spring training until about four or five years ago, because it always seemed like some mystical place. Like, just like, oh, spring training. It's, you attach all that Roger Hornby, look out the window, Roger Hornsby, like, look out the window, wait till spring type of stuff. And it seems like this magical place. And then you go down there and you're like, oh, I'm just in Florida.
Yeah, people that know me know that this is not only one of my least favorite places to be, it's my least favorite place to be, but it's where half of spring training is, and it's where I was here for 15 years in a row covering the Astros in Kissimmee, and so that might have a little bit to do with kind of my feelings about the whole state, but it's not a mythical thing as much as, but for fans, it's like so fantastic because they're so close up to the players. So if you come and watch the workouts, you know, like the first 10 days before games start, and the players are just running from field to field and they're doing their drills and they're working on their pop-ups and they're, covering bases and, you know, just the things that you hear about them doing. And it's very cool. I mean, it's very cool for fans.
But then you leave and you're still in Florida.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there's places in Florida that are better to be than other places. It's just funny because, like, where I live, I mean, if I lived in Detroit, in Cleveland, Cincinnati, like, I would be so excited to get to spring training. When I leave Houston, it's 72 degrees and sunny. I'm like, oh, my God, what am I doing? So it's not that wonderful for people that live in warm weather.
Yeah, and I went to a few, when I was in New York Magazine, I went to a few Yankee spring trainings. And, again, I don't mean to. There are obviously lots of people that live in Florida, and some of them may even probably have the wherewithal to figure out how to download podcasts, at least 1-2%. And so I don't mean to offend those lucky few in the elite, but I went to Yankee spring training, and they're actually, to be fair, there's a lot of parts of Florida that are great. Tampa is not one of those parts. And
I'm not a big fan.
No.
You know what my favorite place to go at spring training is Lakeland. I love the Tigers ballpark. I absolutely love being there. So that's one place that I really like being.
Listen, the ballparks are great. No one's talking about the ballparks. Those are awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone in Florida. But there's something about Tampa. My two things I discovered when I went to Tampa. One was that you basically, the only time I've ever been to Tampa was for spring training, and basically you're like, hey, so where can I get, where's a good place to get lunch? And they're like, there's this place, this really nice, awesome, cool sandwich shop. It's in between the left strip club and the right strip club.
Okay. I'm going to take a no comment.
It's so
on that.
Weird,
yeah.
Because like, but no, I mean that not like, oh, everyone just knows where the strip club are, but like I run down the main street that the Raymond James Stadium and the Yankee Stadiums are, the Steinbrenner Field. You run down and it's like, there's a Subway, there's an oil change place, there's a mega church, there's a strip club, there's a Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like it's like right on the road. It's bizarre. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very, I guess, who, I don't know. Maybe I'm, I don't know. It just, Tampa, just every once in a while you're in a place, you're like, you know, I think maybe Tampa is not meant for me. And maybe it's meant for some people. But.
Oh yeah, no, I'm okay with staying away from Tampa, you know, for the next 20, 30 years. And I do, except when I come to Yankee Spring Training,
course,
and the Yankee Spring Training experience is actually pretty cool.
Of course.
But yeah, no, Tampa,
the stadiums
Tampa's
are awesome.
Just,
exactly. Right. It's like, yeah, exactly. Anyway, so, okay, so I want to go over a few things with you, because, you know, it's still spring training, so I don't want, you know, it's not like a season preview, but I just kind of want to go over some of the more interesting things going on. But before, I thought we'd, like, look at a team in each division. We'll see how it works. I don't know. I just kind of wing these things, as any regular listeners can certainly tell you. But I do want to talk about something I wrote about the other day. It's really kind of fascinating. I can't believe that Rob Manfred has only been on the job a month. Like, it feels like a million things have happened, right? It feels like not only a million things are happened, but it's just like, I fully expect him tomorrow to be like, okay, so listen, I'm not saying this is next on the agenda. This is not a huge priority. I'm just floating the idea. Have we thought about playing baseball on hoverboards? Like, I'm not saying that's next. I'm just saying that, like, it's something that we can have a discussion about. I actually kind of love it, even when he'll float things. I'm like, eh, I don't know if I like that idea so much. I love the idea that, like every week brings this new, like, philosophical conversation about what baseball needs, what it should have. And I have to say, it feels dynamic in a way that, God bless Bud, but it feels dynamic in a way it hasn't felt in a long time.
Well, yeah, and I mean, what better way to gauge how people would react to some of your decisions if you float it out there, something that you're saying will likely not happen, and then just watch everybody lose their mind. And I thought it was really funny with the whole, like, oh, you know, we would consider eliminating the shift, and just hearing and reading the writers that are, like, way, way too into this. Like, everybody needs to take a step back for a second. And you would have thought that he would have said, let's, you know, flog the players if they take a step to the wrong side of second base. I mean, I like that he's, like, putting it out there that he also understands that, like, mostly this isn't going to happen. But I just find it so entertaining that the people that defend, I mean, people are either on one end of the fence or the other, but the ones that defend the analytic-minded front offices, and by the way, they all are. I mean,
right.
They all are.
Right.
But that just defend, you know, all of these, like, sabermetrics to the letter, and they just, it's like they took it personally when he just suggested, and what he was saying had a lot of valid points, and that he's looking out for the fan experience, and he understands the front offices are not responsible for that, they're responsible for winning games. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, and again, I still short of shock colors, I'm not sure how you actually implement it. Like, I'm not sure if, like, okay, the second baseman is outside of his zone and he gets a zap or something, which is possible. It would be kind of entertaining. It certainly would be fun to watch. But
don't tease me, bro.
Yeah,
can you imagine? Just go out there and tase him.
I have to say, that would be looking out for the fan experience, if you ask me. but regardless, because to me, I thought the real tell was when the pace of game not the discussion, but the actual rules came down, for all the talk of, oh my gosh, there's going to be this beeping clock, and, like, the pitcher's going to, like, the mound's going to have a trap door, and he's going to fall in a moat, and there will be crocodiles. Like, for all of these things that people were all completely freaked out about, I have to say, and I was worried too, like, I'm more of a traditionalist than I think I'd like to admit, but the pace of game changes were very reasonable and very kind of subdued and kind of exactly what I want. And to me, I thought, I kind of liked that idea to speak loudly but carry a soft stick, as a case maybe. I kind of liked the way he handled that situation.
Well, yeah, and actually, like, the pace of game rules, these new rules are actually things that have sort of always been in place.
Right.
They've just never been enforced. So, you know, I mean, the batter having to keep, like, one foot in the box. But I do actually, you know, when I was reading David Ortiz's rant on it, but he actually did have some pretty good points. that it really does favor the pitcher and that you should be able to step out of the box if you're upset with the pitch and you need to gather your mind together or you need to be thinking about strategy and you need to try to be figuring out the next thing the pitcher's going to throw. So I did kind of understand that. But for the most part, like, you're supposed to throw the ball within, like, 12 seconds, and you're supposed to stay in the batter's box, and it's going to be up to the umpires to just implement it. And so, yeah, they didn't make any sweeping changes, and it probably won't affect things that much. And, you know, the older players, or, like, David Ortiz, are going to have a problem with it. The younger players will adjust. And baseball does have a responsibility. And I know, you know, I mean, I've been watching most of my games in Houston for the last few years, and, you know, my argument is, of course, if you want shorter games, then you just have better baseball players because you have to get pitchers who can get guys out. You'd be surprised how quickly these games can go. But, yes, I mean, 3.5 to 4 hours is unacceptable for a regular season game, and they have to do something about it because they are. They're going to lose interest for young people because their attention spans are shrinking with the advent of how, you know, abbreviated we're doing everything now. And so attention spans are also becoming abbreviated.
Yeah, I feel like, again, I'm the worst audience on this because I would be perfectly happy, unless, of course, I was there covering a game on deadline. I feel obliged to point that out. But I would be happy if games lasted for, like, if I'm in a baseball game, I'd rather be at a baseball game than, like, not be at a baseball game. So generally speaking, I tend to not mind. I'd rather the 2 innings after they shut off beer sales go quickly. But other than that, I'm generally comfortable with the game lasting as long as possible. But I know it's not for me.
Yeah, no, the thing is, if it's 10:45, looking at the stands, there's not many people there.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, there's nobody there because they're like, they have to go. They have to work the next day, they have school, or they're just really bored. So it's very rare that you get like a 3 hour, 45 minute game that's actually like really
compelling.
Impressive.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. But, well, we'll see. I thought that was quite reasonable, but I kind of like the idea. I'm just waiting for the next thing. It's going to be fun to see whatever, like, as I figure, the thing, too, is, like, each one of these things, like, there'll be, like, a week, and we'll all gnaw on it and chew on it for a week, and then he'll give another interview, and there'll be something else. And I like that, you know, for crowd. This is a time where, you know, we should be talking about baseball. There's nothing that much. College basketball is starting to wrap up a little bit, but the NBA is still kind of and football is, you know, football is football. So, you know, I feel like if we have these kind of big conversations, I feel like it's only a good thing. So I like the idea. In other words, when we talk about the hoverboard baseball tomorrow, just remember that Rob Manfred listened to this podcast and said, "Oh, that's a good idea. I like that."
He knows what he's doing because look, he throws something out there and all of a sudden everybody's scurrying around like little ants,
exactly,
talking about it for days at a time. So baseball is continuing to be in the conversation, and that cannot be bad for anybody in our industry.
Absolutely not. And speaking of baseball in the conversation, segues to having a baseball conversation. So here's a little like rubric I thought we might chat a little bit because it was too early for like to be doing previews or predictions or anything like that. But, you know, I've been doing this series on Sports on Earth once a week of the 10 most compelling players in each division. Not so much the best players or the worst players, but the ones I personally find, you know, the most compelling stories because, you know, I feel like baseball is an individual game played collectively. The individual stories are as kind of fun to have. But I find each individual division, there's kind of a compelling team in each one. So I kind of want to chew on each of these teams. I'll say what I kind of find compelling about each team, and then we can chew on it, and then you can say one, or you don't have to. It's okay. We're not going to go for 4 hours here. So, I just kind of want to chat each one. I'm going to start with the NL East. To me, the most compelling team in this division is the Mets. Because for all the, I know that like the default position is, well, the Mets are a joke. Ha ha, stupid LOL Mets. And so on. And, you know, I'm reading a book right now. I'm reviewing a book for the Wall Street Journal called Baseball Maverick, How Sandy Alderson Revolutionized Baseball and Revived the Mets by a man named Steve Kettman. And for the record, you know, I don't know if the Mets or their fans are feeling necessarily revived right now. So I wonder about that subhead. But I do think there is something to the, you know, for all the I wrote a column for New York Magazine when they first started doing that, when all the Madoff stuff went down, and I think there's an argument to be made that one of the best things the Mets could have done over the last 5 years was actually not sign a bunch of people to long-term contracts, even if they were all just, even if they were just trying to, like, even if they were not going after these guys. I know a lot of Mets fans have been frustrated with the lack of spending, but to me what's interesting is now, because they don't have these huge massive contracts kind of weighing them down that I suspect they would have if they'd have been been free to spin over the last 5 years. They've actually got some flexibility now. And I look at them, and to me, I don't really think they're a challenger to Washington, but I personally think they're far better than the other three teams in the division.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be better than people think. I don't know that I'm as optimistic as you are as far as where they are right now, but I do, and I did spend yesterday at Mets Center Day and today at Nationals Center Day, so they are kind of in my mind. And yes, it seems like the Mets have a lot of very young, really good talent coming up and some really good arms. And so that makes me feel a little bit better, you know, because I kind of look at them kind of from a peripheral, and that I'm not like paying close attention to them, but they seem to always have something bad going on in the organization, not necessarily that's affecting them on the field, but there seems to be always some Mets thing going on. And then when you look at the actual team, it could be pretty decent. That's not the team that intrigues me the most, but I'm going to go with the thing that's really not that exciting, is that the Nationals. And I was there today at their workout, and it just blew me away. I don't know that I really let it sink in, like, what their starting rotation is going to be. I mean, it is so ridiculous that Tanner Roark is not even going to make this rotation, and he'd be, like, a two on any other team. I mean, it's... you know, Max Scherzer, I mean, it, like, I think it was Bryce Harper, he was like, he's a guy we didn't even meet and we got him. You know, it was like that kind of thing. And so while that's not like, it's not really an intriguing team, it's just a so phenomenally ridiculous good team that you wonder, you know, like, what's going to happen to them. I find it interesting that they can't seem to do anything in October, but this could be like a crazy year for them.
Yeah, it's. I'm so glad they didn't trade a pitcher. I know people were talking about they should trade Strasburg or they should trade Zimmerman after they got Scherzer, but I don't know, man. Like, go for it. I mean, yes, you have these five starters. How often does the world organize itself to where you can actually have these six starters
yeah,
on your team?
Totally.
Then by all means, like, just like go for it. Like, frankly, this, for the record, this will be the second year I've predicted this. I feel like Harper is about to bust out and have an MVP season, and so it just feels like it's got to be coming. And maybe I have too much Nike gear around here. That's certainly possible. But it's certainly like it feels like this team. I don't know. I think it's intriguing because I think it's very rare that you see a team just go for it like this. Like usually, like now with the postseason, it is everyone's shooting for like 88 wins to get in and right, then figure it out. This team can win 110 and they're going for it, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that it's not that often where you see, like, the Mets really don't have any rotation questions either, but it's just going to be a very average rotation. Right. I mean, the Nationals have their starting five set. And so maybe you trade somebody next year. But, yeah, if you have this opportunity, you got Scherzer. I mean, it's not like they're financially strapped. I mean, I don't want to speak for them. I don't have, you know, I'm not writing their checks. But I think everybody is making a healthy amount of money in baseball from, you know, a lot of the national TV deals. So, yeah, they have to see what they have. If it doesn't work out, then, you know, in another year you might, or next offseason you might make some decisions. But, oh, my God, it's just fascinating to see like they could win 110, they could win more. It's just, you sort of think like, well, that can't possibly happen because something surely will go wrong. But then when you have the kind of depth that they do, I mean, you can get an injury and then you haven't missed a beat. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that division, I have to say, I think you can make a pretty strong argument that maybe the two worst teams in the National League are in that division, in Atlanta and Philadelphia. Definitely Philadelphia. And I think Atlanta is completely stripped down now. So I feel like there's a lot of wins to be had there.
No, and don't count out the Marlins. I mean, not that we're going to dissect every team, but
yeah, I know.
They look pretty darn good, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm always underestimating.
Their pitching's good.
I know. Yeah. I always underestimate the Marlins. I feel like if I pick them to do – I feel like if I think they're going to do well – I just have to pick them to win the World Series because they're the Marlins. They only,
right,
they
exactly.
only, yeah. So like, and I just don't want to. I don't want to go back. If they freaking win another World, I can't even. I get upset talking about the Marlins. Okay, we'll go over the National League Central. I'm cheating on this because I'm taking the obvious pick. The Cubs are clearly the most intriguing, compelling team in the division, even though in my completely unbiased, impartial opinion, they're evil and must be stopped. When it comes to the thing with them, I keep harkening back to 2003 with the Cubs, because people, you know, I think people kind of forget a little bit that 2004 was supposed to be the year for the Cubs. You even heard the Cubs at the time talk about how 2003 was the year where they could really start to make the first move, but 2004 is when everything was supposed to coalesce and all the young guys were kind of come together, and that was going to be the great season. 2003 was the year early, and it turned out they of course almost made the World Series that year. I keep looking at the Cubs and wondering if they can do it a year early. And on one hand, you know, to me, my fear with them is they obviously have the young talent, but it's asking a lot for all those guys to come together at once. I can see maybe two or three doing it, but asking all those young guys to come together at once in what I might argue may be the toughest division in baseball, I think that may be asking a lot. But certainly, I love the idea that people are going to be freaking out and people are so excited about them, even though I'm not sure their outfield has a wall right now.
Right, yeah. No, they're, you know, it's kind of funny because you hear like, oh, it's not going to be ready for opening day, and oh, there's all these problems. It just reminds me of when, at the time, Enron Field, now Minute Maid Park, was opening in 2000, and like, it really wasn't done. And I was working for the Astros at the time, and people are like, oh, are you going to be able to start the season on time? I'm like, oh, sure. I mean, oh, there's a few seats missing. I mean, it was just funny. It's like, well, yeah, there's going to be baseball played. Yeah, you know, there might be some things that have to be done on that first road trip away. But
what was it missing? What was it missing?
Oh, it was missing, I think it might have been something, like something in the stands, just some seats, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, walls or anything. I mean, the field was ready to go.
Yeah, it's not like there was a hill in center field or something. I mean, come on.
Oh, my God. I keep waiting for them to take that stupid thing out, but.
There's a flagpole on. The flagpole's still there, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's
yes.
So crazy.
Yes, I call it dangerous and stupid, but we'll save that for later.
There's a big block in cement that you can run into catching a fly ball. It never fails to confuse me. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's on an incline, and everyone's like, well, nothing's happened yet. I'm like, I don't need a guy to actually fall on his chin and snap his neck in order for me to now think it's dangerous. I've been thinking this for 15 years, and I hope that it doesn't happen, and I worried when Craig Biggio had that like one-year stint in center field. It worried me, but anyway. We all ended up happy. So what were we talking about?
That's okay. I want to talk about that. Maybe we'll get to the Astros. I've been to all but four or five stadiums, and one of them I've not been to Enron. And for the record, I am of the belief that they should have to continue to use the Enron name until the original Enron contract is over. I just feel like that's punishment. They should have to, as 20 years, I think it was 20 or 25 years, I think that should
30.
Be 30. So there you go. I'm sorry. But like, and also stunning to hear that something involved with the name Enron was not completely efficient and ready to go at the beginning. But anyway, sorry. We're in your bailiwick now, and we already talked too much about. So do you agree? The Cubs are probably the most compelling team, and plus we'll get on a rant about the Cardinals, and we're not ready for that yet. I'm not prepared for the. It always takes me like 2 or 3 months I have to get my fortitude up to for everyone to hate the Cardinals again. Like it hurts me. Like I know it's not supposed to. Yankees fans aren't hurt by people hating the Yankees, but it still actually hurts. So it takes me a couple months to get charged up, and I'm not there yet. So I'll just
it bothers people hate the Cardinals.
What's that?
It bothers you when other people hate the Cardinals.
It does. It does. It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And I know people tell me I'm supposed to do like a heel turn. I'm supposed to be like, yeah, take it. We're all, but I'm just, it's not, you know, I feel like that's not, I'm not that kind of sports fan. I'm not the guy that yells at the refs and yells at the umpires or likes to get in scuffles with opposing fans. Even Cubs fans, I always joke with them because I would say 90% of my friends are diehard Cubs fans. So, but I don't know. I just don't like the idea that like listen, one of my good friends, Joe D'Alessio, who wrote with me in New York Magazine, he's written for us at Sports Center a lot. He, you know, he grew up a Yankee fan. So like, you know, to him, you know, there's no, yeah, we're the Yankees. Yes, you guys suck. We're the Yankees. Like, it's just his team. That's just his team since he was 5 years old.
Right.
And so.
No, that would be nice if everybody had that kind of attitude.
Right. Yes. Right.
Just quietly rooted for their team. Well,
I don't know if someone has to quietly root for their team as much as it is not, you know, I agree the Yankees fans, I don't want to turn into the Yankees fans thing. The point is I feel like myself, and I've had this conversation with many other Cardinal fans, it's frankly one of the most annoying things about us is this idea of, no, we're not, we just want to be like, we don't want any trouble, which just makes us that much more hateable. And I know that And I know that, and I'm just going to let it go.
You know, I think that I think over time, though, and I want to be careful of how I said it, but
no.
Over time, Cardinals fans at one point were just great Cardinals fans, you know, wonderful, educated, knowledgeable baseball fans that really knew what was going on. And then it just over time, and that's what happens with winning, they just got kind of obnoxious. I mean, they're just kind of like, we are so great.
Yeah, I just, you know? I don't actually know any of those Cardinal fans. I keep hearing about them, and I'm sure they're there. But and maybe it's because I'm still hanging out with the same Cardinal fans I was hanging out with 20 years ago. That may have something, that may in fact be the reason. But so let's just blame it on the kids today, as far as I'm concerned. It's the damn kids.
I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know.
No,
I don't have a problem with, like, the Cardinals players. Just there was this kind of arrogance that was around them that was a little off-putting.
I understand.
But,
you're not. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. I just it makes me upset. Okay, well, to the NL West, to me, I think there's several fascinating teams in this division, but I feel like it still feels like the Dodgers are the team that, like, I keep waiting for them to either explode or, like, the wheels just come off in the first month and a half. They feel a little bit more stable now, maybe in kind of the Friedman regime. They feel, like, a little bit more stable than last year where you wondered if it was all going to careen out of the way. But, you know, I wrote a thing last week. It's very there are things in baseball that absolutely baffle me, and particularly fan reactions to things. I do not understand. I wrote about this in my Compelling Players. I do not understand not liking Yoasiel Puig. Like, I literally don't understand it. I keep looking to try to find some evidence as to what he's doing wrong. And I to me, that is exactly what baseball, like, sure, that he does some knuckleheaded things and he gets confused. He's young. He's 22 years old. But the idea that, like, I just literally don't understand a baseball fan that doesn't like Yoasiel Puig.
Well, but Dodgers fans really like Yoasiel.
I know, I know they do. But outside of baseball, no, excuse me.
Well, this is why.
Yeah.
No, this is why.
Okay.
Because the media gets hung up on what is happening with him showing up late and all the stupid things that he's doing in the clubhouse and all the things that he's doing to not really be like a team guy. And so the media is like, they are fixated on that, and that's what they're reporting. And
the
people that don't want to like him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right, right.
They find reasons. I mean, they read the media reports, and then they find reasons not to like him. Whereas, like, if he's your guy, I think he's going to be your guy. I remember writing, I was at Dodger Stadium last year, and it was Yasiel Puig bobblehead night. And, like, there were 55,000 people there. And Puig was, like, high-fiving the fans in right field, and he was playing up to them. And it was, like, his mom throughout the first pitch. It was just, like, awesome day. And I tweeted, like, Yasiel Puig is good for baseball. And then, I mean, you thought I would have, like, said that he, you know, needs to be shot in seven different ways. I mean, it was ridiculous.
And
I mean, the fans were like, you're such a homer. I'm like, I'm not a homer. I mean, I don't know the guy. But, you know, people get mad. You know, they hate the media. But they're reading all the stuff that the media is writing, and they are repeating it, and then they hate us.
Yeah, I know.
But he's actually really good for baseball on the field.
Oh, yeah.
On the field, I really good for baseball.
And, like, it's off the field. It's, like, it's not like he's getting in trouble. Like, fine, he drove his car too fast.
Like, he needs to grow up. He needs to mature. He needs to get his head in the game. And there's no doubt that he does make stupid mistakes. You can't go through an entire major league career and make, like, kind of, like, I mean, just mental mistakes and just not concentrating enough.
Yeah.
And so if he can improve on that, but no, I think he's an electric player. I think he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's 22 years old. Like 2 years ago, like 3 years ago, he probably, like, I always love that, like, people seem to get angry at Puig for not knowing unwritten rules and all those sort of things. But, like, for crying out loud, like, he was in Cuba 3 years ago. He's 22 or 23 or however old he is, for crying out loud.
He doesn't speak the language, and he is trying to adjust, and he's trying to grow up. And think about when we were 22. I mean, put yourself in the middle of a country where you literally can't communicate with anybody. I mean, there's a lot that goes, and he's making a ton of money.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of adjusting to make, but no, I think he'll be fine. But that's not really my intriguing team. My intriguing team is the Padres.
Yeah,
the Padres,
yeah.
Because everyone is like, you know, I mean, we all know what happened in the offseason, and AJ Preller just, like, totally just went off and changed everything. But we don't know that this is actually going to work. So they really wanted to improve the offense, and they believe that they did, and it appears that they did. And they already had really good young starting pitching, so they didn't really need to do a ton with that. But I think that adding James Shields, all of a sudden I was like, okay, they actually are saying, like, we are going to be a contender this year. And I sort of thought that this was going to be a little bit of, like, at least a two-year process. But at the same time, I'm like, wow, you put all this mix together, and this could be, really good, or this could be like really underwhelming. And so I think that's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and it's nice to have the Padres. If there were, I'll put it this way, if there were one team in the last 10 years that you comfortably could not pay attention to in baseball and not miss that much, it was probably the Padres. And I say that, like, they've won the division a couple times. It's not like they've been completely relevant, but they've even just been kind of bland, even when they've been successful in a lot of ways. And so I love this. I love that, like, they're just, again, like with Washington, someone's just going for it. And I kind of love it, man. And, like, it reminds me of, It certainly puts to lay, you know, it's funny, there's been this big discussion in basketball about the Philadelphia 76ers, and there was some discussion, well, obviously there's been this discussion about the Astros, the idea of how do you rebuild? How do you change the notion of a franchise? And I think both ways, I think we'll see which one works better. I certainly think we'll talk about this when we get to the Astros, that they've obviously made some very, very positive movements. But I love that like, a guy comes in, he's like, you know what, let's change it now. Let's, like, change it right now. And to me, I don't know if it's going to work, but if I were a Padres fan, I would be doing backflips.
Yeah, because it's just going to be more interesting, and they're definitely going to win more games. It's just like when you put an entirely new mix, and you're basically putting a completely different lineup on the field. It could take a while for them to, you know, sort of accustom to each other. It could take a while for them to play well together. I mean, you just don't really know what's going to happen. But what I like is, you know, teams are kind of saying, like, we don't need to, like, there's money coming in. Like, we actually have money to spend. Let's go spend it. And while you still need to develop your own players, and you can't just totally build teams, obviously, in free agency. But at the same time, these guys are getting creative, and it just seems like they're like, no, we don't want to wait 3 years. We want to actually win now. Let's try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think it's just moving into that sort of direction. I think it's very cool. I think it's awesome for San Diego. I mean, they've not developed like a good hitter. I mean, a really like good, you know, superstar hitter. I mean, they've just have not been able to really, you know, capture kind of that minor league magic and bring it through. And so, you know, they needed to do something, and they certainly did.
It's just fun. I just like look. I'm like, oh right. They have just an Upton 2. like every time I look at them, like, they, oh, wow, they have. So it'll certainly be enjoyable. I couldn't agree more. All right, go to the AL East. To me, now, also, I agree with Grant Brisby and from SB Nation and a couple other people. This is not among the more popular notions in the world of baseball, but I have to say, I actually want A-Rod to have a good year. I do. I want him to have a good year. I want him to – I don't need him to – like, I don't need him to, like, do a heel turn or start being like, how can he do a heel turn? At this point, a heel turn for A-Rod would be to be like a really nice guy that everybody loves. But for me, like, I don't know. I kind of feel like A-Rod is this fascinating character that we've been talking about for 20 years, and to have him just like cut because Mike Lupica is really angry at him, to me, seems like a little bit of a waste. And I don't know. I have to say, I'm curious to see if he has left. This is, regardless of your thoughts about the PEDs or anything with that, this is one of the greatest players in baseball history. I'm pretty curious to see what he has left.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this. And I was at Yankees camp, and I was talking to one of my reporter friends, and I said, you know, looking at this from the outside, I am so fascinated by this. I'm not angry, and I'm not, like, rooting for him. Like, I'm just so intrigued to see how this all shakes out. If I had a cover it, I'd be losing my mind. It reminds me a lot of Roger Clemens antics like 7-8 years ago. But, you know, if you're kind of just looking at this, like, you know, he looks really good. Mm-hmm. There were some pictures that were sort of, you know, bad angles that were taken of him and put on the internet that made him look like he was really fat and out of shape. And that's not the case. He looks the exact same as he's always looked. But, I mean, I don't think that, you know, with his age and the fact that he's had, like, two hip replacements, basically, not replacements, but surgeries, and, you know, and he hasn't played in a year, I just don't think that there's any chance that he's going to be able to play at the level that he needs to play. And so, no, I'm not hoping he has a good year at all. I will never have any sympathy for the Yankees either way.
Right, that's fair. That's
but
fair.
I just think, like, if he has a, you know, if he has a terrible year, like an awful year where you can't justify keeping him on your roster, that's when it becomes really intriguing.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? Right. Not this year, but the year after that, the year after that. And that is what is, you know, fascinating about this whole thing.
Listen, I'm sure if the Yankees agree to give back the 2009 World Series, just give it to the Phillies. Just the Phillies get it, and the Yankees, they can only say they have 26, and they have to give back all the money that they made from that and any any revenue they got from A-Rod, then we can void the contract. I think that's a fair deal.
It's so funny because, like, I mean, it's what's going to happen is it's going to be, like, the insurance company is going to fight with the Yankees if they can prove that he's totally disabled. And, you know, it's going to be this huge thing. And then the insurance company is not going to want to pay it if they can prove that he's totally disabled. And, of course, A-Rod's not going to want to acknowledge that he's totally disabled if it ever gets to that. And so it's just going to be this huge fight. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what's going to happen. I also think that he had a mental addiction to the PEDs. I mean, I think that, right. You know, how much were they really helping him physically? But I think there's an emotional attachment to that, as you would see with, like, an alcoholic or somebody who smokes. It's often just a mental thing that they also need to have it. And so if he's really playing clean, and he says he is, then, you know, I think we all know at this point that he is not the most emotionally stable guy. And you have to be so tough to play this game. And so I think that's going to be an issue, too.
Yeah, I just love the idea that if he has a great year, all of a sudden the Yankees are going to be like, what do you mean? We love him. Like, I know he's not, but I want it to happen just for that. Just to see everybody reverse and be like, oh, no, never mind. Never mind. Forget it. We don't want to avoid it. It's great. We love him. I would love to have
him. What 40-year-old player has had a good year? I mean, in all seriousness, like, a guy, there's been players that have played past 40. I'm not talking about pitchers, but position players. I mean, what guy has been good at 40? I mean, Craig Biggio wasn't good at 40. Derek Jeter wasn't good at 40. Like, who's been good at 40?
Yeah, just Bonds.
Nolan Ryan was good at 40.
Ryan was good. Yeah, but come on. Yeah. Nolan Ryan, if any guy was juicing. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. Please don't. Nolan Ryan will pump me down and put me in a headlock. Which would be awesome, actually, as long as someone was there.
That would be awesome.
To snap a picture. Okay, well, we'll move on. I know this is a team you're frothing at the mouth to talk about in the AL East. I don't want to run us too long. The AL Central, is this the year? I think the White Sox are going to win the division. This is my big push. This is the thing I'm most excited about. It feels to me Detroit. They're already like 2 years away from being the Phillies. It feels like this is the year that that the wheels finally fall off. And I think Kansas City is going to take a big step back. I don't see them making. I think last year was a fun little thing that they'll be able to talk about in 20 years when they make their next World Series. But I don't see that moving forward. I like the White Sox a lot. I like that they're aggressive and going for it. And I feel like Abreu is just. He's this Bunyan-esque character that is like you just don't see in baseball anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, they supplemented their pitching staff, and they kind of made the moves that they need to make to go from being a team that is not horrible but that no one's paying attention to a team that's going to be a contender. And like you said, I think it has more to do with the fact that the other teams are so unexciting, and I totally agree with everything you just said. At the Royals, I don't think they're even going to make the playoffs. I think that they may win 79, 80 games, and the Indians are, you know, whatever, they're there. And yeah, the Tigers, I'm like, well, wait, they've lost so much. And I mean, have they done anything to improve that bullpen? Yeah. I mean, did they do anything? Because that was a bullpen that I can't even believe. I mean, they got there, you know, to October by the skin of their teeth, and then they just had no shot because they couldn't get anybody out late in the game. But yeah, I mean, I would say that it's going to be the most boring division in terms of there's not really going to be anybody that good. And so it's going to be like whoever can cancel each other out the most. And squeeze by with like 82 wins to win the division.
Yeah, so I hope it's the White Sox. I like that. I also like that park more than people. I know everyone's down on it because they love the old one, and it's kind of, and but I actually kind of like it. I think it's a better park than people give it credit for. But
I never minded it. I thought it was. I mean, people complain so much about it. I guess because the upper deck is like a straight shot.
Yeah, it's
up
high.
Is the balance? Like, who? I mean, of the people that are complaining about their ballpark, like, who are they sitting in the upper deck? Like, no. Right. Those aren't the people that are up there. I don't talk to those people. I don't know who those people are.
Yeah.
So why is everyone complaining about that? But whatever.
People like to complain. It's the digital social media age. It's nothing but whining. Nothing but a bunch of whiners. All right, and then the last one. Because I didn't want to pick the, I couldn't pick the Astros because those are your, you've covered them and know them so well for so long. I went with the Angels just because it feels like, you know, they – With the sadness of the Hamilton thing, and this team is still getting older, and you know, one of the things I thought was fascinating about when Trout signed his extension is he signed it long enough. He signed it for this period of time where he basically said, All right, let's just see if you guys are going to be any good at the end of this, because the Angels have so much kind of wrapped up in all these older players. And to me, you know, it's exciting for me. I've talked to you in the past about the Astros. I've read a lot of things you've written about the Astros, about this kind of crazy period they've gone through the last few years. It is pretty exciting. You know, I don't think they're a contender for this division yet, but it is exciting, man, to see, like, it's starting to kind of come together a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's definitely starting to come together, but I do fear that they have accelerated the plan. And I know a lot less about the personnel than the front office does, but they have traded away three good young starting pitchers and over the course of 1 year, which I've never seen an organization do that's in a rebuilding mode. And I feel like, in a way, I feel like maybe there was some pressure from, the ownership and the partners to kind of stray away from the long-term plan and start getting people to see sooner than later. And so, while I think that they're in a really good position this year, I mean, because they added, they said, we're going to add $20 million to the payroll, and they did. And, I didn't believe them, and then they went and they did it, so I stand corrected on that. But they went out and got, some experienced major league players. And so I think that this upcoming year, a lot of people I thought, we've decided, we think 79 wins, and basically getting 79 wins from them signing Mushik and Gregerson for their bullpen, and I'm lopping off 9 blown saves. I'm coming in with my number, and it's that scientific. And so people are like, well, they probably win 78-79, and it wouldn't be shocking if they won 82, but it also wouldn't be shocking if they won 73. So I think that it could go any way. It's just, I don't know. I just feel like for next year and the year after that, I'm like, how do you keep progressing when you have continued to get rid of young starting pitching? I don't get that part. For somebody like Evan Gattis, these things are still don't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I think for this year, they position themselves very well to be a pretty respectable team.
So you're there. Are fans excited, skeptical, just happy to be able to watch them on television finally?
Yes, the fans are very excited to be able to watch them on television. there are fans that are excited. It's just a very small base that we're talking about. I mean, they have a lot of work to do. Yeah. And I don't know that they really truly understand how far they've fallen and how much they have to do to come back. Getting their games on TV, and I have to say that Craig Biggio not making it in the Hall of Fame last year, completely devastated the organization, and everybody was just like, so upset, and I think it was probably the best thing, because they would have had the season-long celebration, and nothing would have been shown on TV, because nobody would have been getting the game. Yeah. And so I think that they're going to be able to ride this little tidal wave. They're going to have a lot of nights honoring him, and so they need to get people into the stands. And so they have to remind people that the team is there, and I can't really express enough how much the city has forgotten that the team is there.
They moved on.
Really scary. They have moved on to where it's just, yeah, I mean, it is it's really unbelievable. And so they have to understand, this year they need to be doing a lot of work to start to build that fan base. Because, the TV ratings, even in the past when they were on TV, weren't wonderful. I mean, it's definitely a team that has to continuously find ways to stay in the news, and they have to start winning games. But the figures are not going to happen overnight. Fans are not going to be passed just with one 8-game winning streak. But it will certainly help if they can put together, a few good stretches here and there.
All right. Well, all I know is this: is that the more relevant Houston comes, because Houston, they have fallen into this dark place for me where they've just been gone. Like, it's the same way, I can't name to you any 76ers players right now. I 3 years I'll be able to, I can with the Astros now. But it's just been a team that, other than Altuve, you've basically just not really had to pay attention to for the last couple of years. So now that they're back, I'm going to probably lean heavily on you for this. I assume the whole city's going to have to, because again, the famous 0.0 rating, which is really kind of amazing, because Like, again, I don't believe Nielsen boxes either.
I was watching that game.
I know, so it's a lie, right.
So it had to be 0-0-0-0-1.
Exactly. This is why the Nielsen ratings is a scam. It's a scam. They've been running a scam on the American public for years and years and years.
It's kind of sad, though. It is. I mean, that's terrible. It's humiliating, and it should never happen, even if there's a Texans game going at the same time. That should never happen. It's not good. Nothing.
And even just future for Nielsen, even if it's actually, you know what, just say 0.1. Just because we know someone's been like, look, I watched it, your ratings are a lie. And that will take care of that problem. Anyway, all right, Allison, thank you for chatting with me. I've had a wonderful time. I was very excited to get to do this. And now, hopefully you'll hang around and we'll do a little bit of trivia. It won't be hard. It'll be easy, I promise. But I'm a big fan of your work, and I'm very excited. I know we've had you on before, but we got to have a more expansive conversation this time. So thanks for chatting with me. And so where you go? So you are actually like, where's your next stop? Where's your next spring training stop?
I'm actually heading back to the Mets tomorrow, and then at the end of the day, I'm going down to Cardinals just to meet one person, and then I'm going out to Orlando area, and then I'm going to Phoenix. Woo-hoo!
Oh, good, okay.
I'll be in Arizona next week sometime.
Okay, well, listen, we've made it very clear at the beginning of this podcast how much you hate everyone from Florida. So, I think that's a...
Sorry. I have relatives here.
I know, I'm just joking.
Everybody has relatives in Florida. Right?
Seriously, like Florida is made up of relatives. So I guess by that measure, every place is made up of relatives. No, there's one poor state where everyone is just living alone and has no family and no friends. But anyway, so this doesn't say there's anything wrong with living. Never mind. Anyway, Allison, thank you for coming on. Hey, Ron, we'll do some trivia, but I had a great time. So we'll chat again down the line.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for having me. It's great.
All right. Thank you to Allison Futter. She is the national correspondent for MLB.com. You can see her work on MLB.com and follow her on Twitter at Allison Futter, AllisonFootere. This is the Wheel Leash Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back with Allison later in the week with trivia and then a new podcast next week. Have a great day. Enjoy the week. Enjoy actual real live spring training baseball games and also some conference tournament games. Go EIU Panthers. Take care, everyone.